This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Happy Friday, everyone. Shabbat Shalom. Welcome to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins, who is president of the Family Research Council. I'm a 30-year media veteran and producer of Washington Watch. I've been at this for a long time. I've been a media advisor for any number of political campaigns. I have worked for NBC. I have done stories for CBN and the 700 Club. I studied, I have the real shingle from a great school, University of Missouri, studied journalism there. I even went to seminary, have a seminary degree and served as a pastor. I'm ordained and served for 15 years, but God called me into the media. And friends, there's very few conservatives that really do real journalism, real media, and there's very few places that allow you to hone your craft. And it's an honor to be here with the Family Research Council. I have produced this program for nearly a year, can you believe that, and learned so much. Have a great deal of respect for the Family Research Council and Tony Perkins and what it's all about. So if you're out there, if you're a young person and you want to study journalism, there's a place for you. There are places like the Family Research Council that do real journalism, but from a Christian perspective, from a conservative worldview that embraces the truth, and the truth will set you free. And we talk about those issues on this program every single day. Well, on this evening's program, there is a movement to pull down our nation's Civil War monuments. Is this historical revisionism? We'll talk about it with Ambassador Ken Blackwell here in just a moment. And a number of corporate CEOs bolted from President Trump's business councils. Does this say more about them than President Trump? Well, Dustin Danhoff, general counsel of the National Center for Public Policy Research, well, he thinks so. He'll be here to discuss. And another horrific terrorist attack, this time in Spain. We'll have a live report from Chuck Holton, who is in Barcelona. Chuck is producer of Oliver North's program. He's a foreign correspondent. It does news for NRA TV, and we'll talk with him in just a little bit. And yesterday, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins, well, he put out the clarion call, a call to prayer and restoration. It's really, folks, the only thing that can truly bring us back together and bring healing to our land. Well, Senior Pastor Jack Graham of Prestonwood Baptist Church, he will be here to join us for that conversation. And of course, we'll take your calls. Are you struggling with how to respond to what happened in Charlottesville? Are your liberal friends and family members accusing you of being a racist because of your beliefs? Is your heart grieved from all of that? I know mine is. Well, we're going to talk about that and hopefully get some tools on how to deal with what's going on in our nation. Well, on the heels of the insidious violence in Charlottesville, there is renewed attention to dozens of Confederate monuments around the country. Since the white nationalist rally, over a dozen statues have been removed, roughly nine vandalized. But is that the answer? And then, of course, breaking news just a little while ago, Chief of Staff Bannon, he's out. He's out the door. Well, we're going to talk with Ambassador Ken Blackwell, Senior Fellow for Family Empowerment at the Family Research Center, former Secretary of State of Ohio. He has got a wealth of information for us. He's written a thoughtful column entitled Historical Revisionism. Ambassador Blackwell, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, it's good to be with you, sir.
Well, before we dive into what's going on in the aftermath of Charlottesville, Stephen Bannon, he's out, either resigned or President Trump let him go. Just some initial reaction to that.
Well, all of the personnel in the White House serve at the president's discretion and at his will. He is putting together a new combination of personalities that will help him advance his agenda. We must stay focused on his agenda to get our economy growing again at a substantial rate of 3 to 4% annually, getting Americans back to work, getting our labor participation rate up, and lifting family income. What's at issue here is not so much the lieutenants that the individual lieutenants surrounding our commander-in-chief, what's important to focus on is, as he put together, as he assembled the right team, the right combination of folks that will advance his agenda to protect us both domestically and nationally. Is he on a course to build the readiness of our armed forces, and that has he put together the team that can carry out his game plan? That's where we are today. Steve Bannon will land on his feet. He did an excellent job for the president, and I don't think he expected to be there more than a year. He is a disruptor of the status quo, and I think he's helped the president along that course.
And don't you think, I mean, good leaders constantly evaluate their team. Who's on the bus? Are the right people in the right seats on the bus? And maybe some people don't need to be on the bus, and that's kind of what we see going on, isn't it?
Looking at the lineup all the time, good coaches, good field managers, good quarterbacks always assess the personnel on the field to make sure that they can execute the game plan.
Well, Ken, a recent article entitled Historical Revisionism on townhall.com, you write, look back on the great men and women of history. Most of them fare poorly when subjected to modern scrutiny. They launched wars, murdered rivals, enslaved enemies, enriched allies, and violated most every moral norm valued by people today. Really insightful column. If you haven't read this, folks, I encourage you to go to townhall.com and read that article. Tell us about what motivated, what drove you to write that piece.
Well, in short, look, given the centrality of slavery to the Civil War, I think history has rightly judged the Confederacy. But yet even its leading figures were complex men and women. Robert E. Lee, for example, opposed slavery and secession before the Civil War and promoted reconciliation afterwards. Not to see him in the fullness of the complexity of his life in the context of his time is wrong. Because only when you look at the life, the contributions, the positives, the negatives of figures like Robert E. Lee, can you come to really appreciate that in 240 plus years, we went from slavery to having an African-American elected president of the United States. Whether you agreed with Barack Obama or not, what makes America the most exceptional human democracy in all of human history is that we have been able to understand that where we are falling short of our ideals, and we've had men and women who have, in fact, stepped in the gap and affected change and moved us to a better future. And we cannot go back and become enslaved with yesteryear. We, in fact, have to look forward, learn from the lessons of history, understand what makes us a robust democracy and a thriving economic force in the world, and build upon those things. To go back and relitigate the Civil War, to judge figures of yesteryear by today's standards and our insights, with the benefit of our insights, it's just wrong and it's counterproductive.
Ken, and many would say we have learned from our history, and we continue to learn, and we continue to try to get it right. Do you believe what happened in Charlottesville and now this new conversation about our monuments, is this a watershed moment for the country?
Yeah, and I think that what we have to understand is that, you know, we've watched change in our country be affected in the courts and legislative bodies. But where most change has effectively taken place and taken grab is in human dialogue, in smaller communities, in one-on-one discussions, debates, and loving exchange, and that has led to a constructive change in the course of history, and it's evidence of that a smart people, you know, don't become entrapped in the negatives of history, but they learn from history and they build on it, and that's what got us from slavery through the Great Civil Rights Movement, you know, and that's what will get us through today. Those who want to drag us back into yesteryear and play negative games will, in fact, only pull us backwards, not propel us forward.
Do you see identity politics happening here? I mean, just a little while ago, Ken, Nancy Pelosi, she said Steve Bannon's firing is welcome news, but it doesn't disguise where President Trump himself stands on white supremacists and the bigoted beliefs they advance. And then in Missouri, my home state senator there, wrote on Facebook that she hopes President Trump is assassinated.
That is not only regrettable, that is shameful. And yes, you know, we are Americans first. We are individuals with unique identities, unique histories, different ethnicities and races. But we are, in fact, Americans first. And what has made us unique is that we fundamentally understand that our human rights, our most fundamental rights, are not grants from any government. They're gifts from God. And in recognizing those God-given rights and fundamental commonalities with one another on the basis that our shared human dignity and human rights come from God, we've been able to move forward. This throwback to identity politics where we put our differences in front of our commonality as Americans, again, pulls us backward, doesn't push us forward.
You know, Ken, I live here in Oxford, Mississippi, and the University of Mississippi, they have struggled with this issue, tried to deal with it. And the way they've come around to it is through what they call contextualization. Isn't it difficult to judge history like the Confederacy, the Civil War, through a modern day moral lens? Like, you know, we know more today. We don't behave that way anymore.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what's important. The only way that you learn is by studying history, understand the complexities not only of the individuals but of the times, learning from their failures and their successes, and building on their successes. You know, to go back and relitigate, you know, the Civil War is not helpful. But to find that there were individuals who on both sides of that divide that were able to come together and as a union propel us forward. And again, I think we have to take a look at the history that we move from that time to a time when we now have blacks who are mayors and the president of the United States.
Ambassador Blackwell, thank you so much. Insightful as always. After the break, we'll talk about Trump's business councils when we return.
In America, we face a media onslaught against the Christian perspective. It is now seen as anti-cultural and invalid. Dr. Michael Paulson, a law professor at the University of St. Thomas, talked about how Christians can respond intellectually. Dr. Paulson has researched common arguments against religious liberty. For example, religious values are no different than ethical values. Dr. Paulson argues that the law should give religious exemptions because of the perspective of a religious person who necessarily believes in God as an ultimate source. Religion is different and necessitates a different kind of devotion. Moreover, the Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom of exercise. The Christian perspective is one that is not outdated, but still present and still valid according to the Constitution. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Hi, this is Dan Celia from Financial Issues. You know, the charitable gift annuity concept is more important today than probably ever. It is something that you have heard me talk about for many, many years. And right now, for now, the tax code is still allowing charitable organizations to establish a charitable gift annuity so that you can be guaranteed permanent income for the rest of your life. Don't waste any time. So many of you have IRAs, 401k money. Peel off a piece of that. Establish your charitable gift annuity so that you have a portion of permanent income that you know is never going to change for the rest of your life. Would you do it today? Call AFA Foundation, 800-326-4543. Extension 345. That's 800-326-4543. Extension 345.
So what would you do with an extra $500 a month in your budget? $500. This isn't hypothetical, by the way. This is something you may need to think about very soon if you decide to become a member of MediShare. MediShare is a way to pay for your health care, and typically it costs $500 less per month for a family versus other health care plans. So seriously, think about this. You could pay off loans, pay down a mortgage, save the money for retirement, donate to charity. That would be a big deal. But you know what? Here's the best thing. MediShare works. It has 250,000 members, and it's growing fast. With MediShare, not only do you save, you don't have to pay for things you don't believe in either, and that is a beautiful thing too. So here's how you can find out more, and you might actually wind up saving even more than $500 a month. So check into it. Here's the number. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23, now available in Montana. 855-PSALM-23.
Back to Washington Watch. Hey friends, it's Friday. Happy Friday. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Tony's the president of the Family Research Council. If you like what you're hearing, go share it with a friend. Go to frc.org. All of these shows are archived there. You can download them. You didn't get a chance to really listen to the whole show, or if you wanted to listen to yesterday's show, want to go back and listen to Tony's call to prayer, calling the nation, asking President Trump to call the nation to prayer, go download it. You can follow Tony on Twitter, T. Perkins, at T. Perkins on Twitter. I'm on Twitter as well, Russ Jones, 60. I'm not 60, but R. Jones, 60. Yep. So you've probably heard lots of folks, recent CEO resignations from Trump, President Trump's administration. They resigned. Several walked away from his business councils. They're being criticized by the nation's leading conservative shareholder activists as being short-sighted and political. With us now to discuss is Justin Danhoff, general counsel for the National Center for Public Policy Research. Justin, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Russ. Thanks for having me on.
Well, Justin, I've followed your work for quite some time, and I know you often go to shareholder meetings. You follow what's going on with these corporations and their many of their liberal policies and how they use stockholder monies and investments and whatnot to possibly advance liberal causes. Tell us just what are some of your general thoughts here about, you know, the disbanding of these councils and these CEOs bolting.
Yeah, so if you think about the nature of these councils and the way they were formed, it was kind of very interesting, and something President Trump did that he didn't get a lot of credit for, actually very, very little credit at all. But what he did was sort of to put together a kind of team of rivals in these executive advisory boards that he created. And what I mean by that is that he selected CEOs from across the political spectrum, including some CEOs that are extremely far to the left. So, for example, Indra Nooyi at Pepsi is often rated as the most liberal CEO of a Fortune 500 company. She was on in the advisory panel. Bob Iger, the CEO of Disney, that, of course, runs the very leftist ESPN and ABC. Mr. Iger himself, his name has been floated as a possible presidential candidate and opponent to President Trump in 2020. he even appointed him to the board. So, you know, the idea of the board was, of course, to provide input on, you know, macroeconomic issues that affect corporations here in the United States and their worldwide dealings as well. And so what we saw happen, and, you know, for those who haven't followed this very closely, the disbanding of the group this week and the large dissension of CEOs that started with Kenneth Frazier on Monday, that process had already started. We can look back to, early spring of this year, where we had the Uber CEO, Travis Kalanick, resign over the issue of Trump's executive orders on immigration, and then Bob Iger resigned over President Trump's decision to withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord. And what we see, and then, of course, on Monday, Kenneth Frazier, the CEO of Merck, and then the CEO of Under Armour and Intel also left. And what we see is a pattern that had developed of CEOs who were otherwise fairly liberal and prone to disagree with President Trump's pro-growth, America First policy and ideology, essentially looking for excuses to make political grandstanding, peacocking statements rather than good, sound business decisions. And so, again, with all of these situations, and then Charlottesville being the most recent, it's just an excuse for these CEOs to try and make a name for themselves and get maybe a good headline in the New York Times, and, you know, the MSNBC might run a flattering segment on them for doing so. But what we have to say to these CEOs is that we think this is a very short-term play. We think that getting a bump from the leftist media really doesn't play well in a large swath of the nation, first of all. When you have an opportunity to sit at the table with the leader of the free world and help craft an economic policy that's good for America, that's also good for your business and good for your brand, and you lost that opportunity as well. And not only that, these CEOs did this, again, they did it for political reasons. They didn't do it for reasons that were germane to their business. And so when we have a fairly evenly divided American electorate, that also means you have a fairly even divided investment community and also potential customer base. So if you're going to take a position on a public policy issue or a political issue that doesn't affect your corporation's bottom line in any sense of the word, you're automatically doing something that may offend 50% of your potential customer base and 50% of your potential investment base. And again, we don't think that that's a good corporate strategy, and that's something that we've been touting, you know, the message we've been taking to corporate boardrooms for years now.
Well, Justin, you know, I was amazed. I was watching every week Trump would bring these power brokers into the White House. I'd never seen such a thing. Put them all around the table. For heaven's sakes, he had the Teamsters, the leaders of the union, for the first time in the White House. You would think a Democratic president would have done that. So, you know, I watched with great interest to see him try to pull these people together in a bipartisan outreach. But let me ask you this question. What about the power of corporate activism? Isn't that a very real dynamic, and didn't these CEOs cave to that pressure?
Oh, absolutely. It's a dynamic at play that I see every day in my work. You know, for those who don't follow much of, you know, what goes on with corporate and shareholder activism, you know, the Free Enterprise Project that I've run is essentially the only group that is right of center that promotes liberty, that promotes, you know, freedom of religion, freedom of speech, and free market ideals. Every other group that engages in shareholder activism comes from the extreme left. They come from environmental groups, anti-religious groups, the big unions. And so since he announced these councils back in January, we're talking, every single one of these CEOs was under fire from these organizations, and I saw it firsthand.
All right,
at
Justin.
Certain shareholder meetings. So yeah, the left was really out for these guys from the get go, and so often,
we've got to wrap it up, Justin.
All right, Russell. Yeah. So it's
Justin Danhoff, General Counsel of the National Center for Public Policy Research. Thank you so very much for being on Washington Watch. We'll continue to follow you. And coming up after the break, we're going to go all the way to Barcelona and hear from Chuck Holton, NRA TV foreign correspondent. We'll be back.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, it looks like we're headed into another negative week on the markets. There seems to be a trend now, and markets are slowing down their growth. The negativity has been very small, even on Thursday, as we saw the Dow drop 1.5% and the S&P down close to 2%. It's still not very big from a percentage standpoint. Cisco Systems continues to add even more money to its massive cash pile outside the U.S. That, according to their reports from the most recent quarter. Now, the company is still optimistic about the idea of a holiday that may occur sometime next year. Keep in mind, if that happens, according to Kelly Kramer, Cisco's chief financial officer, that is going to be huge for Cisco's growth if we see a corporate tax rate on that repatronizing of those dollars to 10% from the current 35%. Cisco says it's prepared to bring $70 billion in cash back home. That's one company. There's billions of dollars, trillions of dollars, some are estimating $4.2 trillion overseas on the sidelines. Can you imagine if we can get $1.5 trillion of that money here, back in America, to go to work in corporate America, to put people to work? I guess that's going to be postponed until we get some certainty in the political atmosphere.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Well, there's a manhunt underway after the terror attack in Spain that's left at least 14 dead and more than 100 hurt. We were going to go live to Barcelona, Spain, to talk with my friend and colleague, former Army Ranger and NRA TV foreign correspondent Chuck Holton, having a hard time getting a hold of him right now. But, you know, folks, this continues to happen, and we continue to see this bloodshed across the land. And U.S. Secretary of State Tillerson, he confirmed that one American was killed in that terror attack, and two suspects, one from Morocco, one from the Spanish enclave of Malala, where, you know, they're doing a manhunt there now. And so it's just a horrific event, a horrific thing to see that is going on in our culture. And one of the things that, you know, if you watch the TV news reports where you're seeing the bodies and you're seeing the people lying in the street and you're seeing just this horrific bloodshed, and it crushes your heart. It breaks your heart. And this manhunt is going on as we speak. One suspect in Barcelona attack is on the run, apparently. And we see that going on as we speak in the news reports. And what the United States is doing is trying to say, we're standing with Spain. We're standing with Spain, and we will help you do what needs to happen. We'll help you go find these terrorists and the terrorist cell, which killed 14 people, also is being attributed to a number of attacks there. Well, I believe we do have Chuck Holton on with us now. Chuck, all the way in Barcelona, foreign correspondent and producer and reporter for NRA TV. Welcome to Washington Watch.
Oh, how are you, Russ?
Well, Chuck, tell us. Police there reporting that the back-to-back vehicle attacks in Barcelona and a nearby resort had been planned for a long time by these Islamic terrorist cell. Is that what you're hearing?
That is. And not only was it a coordinated multi-cell attack, but they had planned to use explosives and apparently more vehicles, because what we're being told is that There were actually three vans rented in the name of the driver who they have, are still looking for. The guy who drove the van through the marketplace. But there are two other vans out there in his name somewhere that they still haven't found.
Well, Chuck, describe what are you seeing there in the area? You're actually in Barcelona. What are you seeing? What's the mood in the streets? What are you hearing from the folks there?
I went down and walked around on the pedestrian promenade that was the site of the attack yesterday, and it was absolutely just packed with people today. Many of those I talked to said, we came out here just to spite the terrorists, just to show them that they're not going to stop us, they're not going to make us cower and be afraid. Now, one could say, well, that's a great sentiment. However, probably the bigger impact that the terrorists will be economic in this area and in the whole of Europe, which is very often their goal. You imagine what the cost would be of the massive amounts of security that they had down there today in overtime and what have you. It's going to be very expensive for them. So whether or not they got the people of Barcelona to cower in fear, it is going to be quite costly for them in one way or another.
Well, Chuck, I mean, Barcelona, this is a tourist destination. This is a main spot in Europe where people go. And now we're hearing that a Northern California man who was spending his first wedding anniversary overseas was among those killed in that attack.
Oh, what a horrible thing, you know. This is there's over 11 million tourists every summer that come to Barcelona, and it's easy to see why. Food is delicious. The scenery is gorgeous. The weather is great. The people are friendly. And unfortunately, that also makes it a soft target and an easy mark for terror groups like ISIS and Al Qaeda, who are looking to gain notoriety in Europe today.
Well, to say just a little bit, I mean, this guy didn't have a stash of weapons and all that. Apparently, used a van, an everyday automobile that we may take for granted. Shouldn't that be concerning to us?
Well, it should be. It's not something that will be easy to ban, that's for sure. I think this is an issue that we're going to face. This is going to hang over our heads and our children's heads for the rest of our lives. It sounds like this cell had planned to use explosives as well, and perhaps even a gas of some sort.
Okay.
There was an explosion in another town the night before, and authorities have linked that to this attack and to the other driving attack, the other ramming attack that was coordinated in the seaside resort town.
Well, and, Chuck Holton, former Army Ranger and NRA TV foreign correspondent, you be safe over there. Thank you for joining us here on Washington Watch. Folks, we're going to talk with Pastor Jack Graham here after the break and take your calls. A call for prayer and reconciliation. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. One of the places we visit on one of the days on our tour of Israel is the Shepherd's Fields. Now, this is a place in Bethlehem. You can look out on any given day and see shepherds with their sheep, as if it were 2,000 years ago during the birth of Christ. So that's a very special place that we visit. Yeah, the terrain would be the same. You can just picture yourself being there the night the angels sang about the glory of the coming of the Lord. That's just one of the places we visit on one of the days. So if you would like to join us on our March 8th through the 16th tour of Israel, we'd love to have you. Just go to the website, twholyland.com, for more information. twholyland.com. Or for a free brochure sent to you in the mail, call us at 800-FAMILIES. That's 1-800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, option 5.
Have you been looking for a way to serve others? Are you able to serve in a ministry without being paid? You and Friendships might be the perfect match. Friendships is currently taking applications for volunteers providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished, both here at home and around the world. Get more information at friendships.org or by calling 337-433-5022.
Many in America seem to have forgotten that its foundation was built on God. In this 40th year celebration of the American Family Association, we invite you to help us remind America once again of the truth behind our national motto, In God We Trust. You can do your part and display your faith with an In God We Trust car decal from the AFA store. Order yours today with free shipping at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
In America today, religious freedom, national borders, and even traditional gender roles are in peril. With all that's happening in our world, our nation is in desperate need of a return to conservative values. Hello, I'm Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of American Family Association. One of the best ways we can make a difference is with our vote. That's why each year the American Family Association is a sponsor of the Values Voters Summit to help increase cultural engagement. This year's Values Voters Summit will be October 13th through the 15th in Washington, D.C. The growing list of confirmed speakers includes people you hear on AFR like Ed Battagliano and Tawny Perkins, as well as Michelle Bachman, George Barna, Gary Bauer, the Benham Brothers, and more. The Values Voters Summit is sponsored in part by AFA Action. To learn more and to register, you can visit valuesvotersummit.org.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. I'm a 30-year media veteran, producer of this broadcast, been in this business a long time. A follower of Christ, conservative journalist, and it's an honor to be here with you all here today, sharing the truth, talking with folks that can help us navigate the way to understand what is happening in our culture. Well, yesterday, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins, he called the nation to prayer and reconciliation as the nation grows deeper divided. And Tony said this, "We are a divided nation that is in crisis. We are no longer talking to each other, only screaming at one another. We are like a married couple in crisis." Well, with us now is Jack Graham, senior pastor of Prestonwood Baptist Church in Plano, Texas. Pastor Graham, welcome back to Washington Watch.
It's good to be with you, Russ.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on. And, you know, there's so much going on in our culture. And I want to give out the phone number because we're going to take some questions as well, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. You know, Pastor, people are struggling right now with what is the proper response. How do we deal with Charlottesville? How do we deal with this chaos going on? What is the Christian perspective? How do we deal with our family members and even our friends that may think we're a racist or think ill of us? Give us some thoughts and where can we look? Give us some coping tools.
Sure. Well, this really is a time for faith, and everything we believe as Christians, our hopes, our trust in God is applicable now, because the Christian faith, what we believe as followers of Jesus, is not just for the good times, but for times like these. And we know there's chaos, we know there's confusion and lack of clarity in the nation right now. The division that you mentioned is very real, and it has been real for some time. And when we have something like Charlottesville or the shooting in Dallas last summer of police officers, or the shooting of congressmen out playing baseball, when you see this lawlessness and sinfulness in the world, when it crops up, it reminds us how desperate our condition is and how needy we are for the presence of God and the power of God to move, and thus the call to prayer of Tony Perkins. And so many of us as pastors, I'm a pastor, and The one thing that we're doing as a church is getting on our knees, getting on our faces before God. We're ramping up the prayers. And you say, well, you know, someone might say, well, prayer, everybody prays. We always say pray, 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 and nothing changes. Well, if I believe that, if I believe that God did not hear or answer our prayers, you know, I would fold my Bible and go home, do something else than what I'm doing. I believe God answers prayer. And when his people cry out to him and call upon him, then he hears. And as a Baptist preacher of yesteryear, Vance Havner, used to say, the problem with the world is that they're desperate and we're not as Christians. So this is the time for us to be desperate, but yet not without hope. I mean, I have a great deal of optimism in spite of everything going on around us. So I'm trusting in God and believing in him, and I'm extremely hopeful that we can see revival in our churches and spiritual awakening in our nation.
You're listening to Washington Watch, and we have Pastor Jack Graham on with us now. And we want to hear from our listeners, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. How are you dealing with people that may think poorly of you because of your worldview, your beliefs, and what are you doing to stand in the gap? You know, Pastor, it just struck me. During the campaign, we were saying that, you know, we're not electing a pastor in chief when we were looking at the different candidates and Donald Trump and his history. And you know, certainly no candidate is perfect. But it does feel like in some ways we do need a pastor in chief right now. And there's some irony in that.
Well, what we need is a strong leader. And
yes.
We're praying that our president would lead us. And in so many ways, he is. And we as Christians should stay on principle. The things that matter to us, the Supreme Court nomination, Gorsuch, of course, that was huge for us, and potential other nominations, religious freedom issues, the sanctity of life, and all kinds of issues. I mean, we're thinking about, of course, there's the concerns regarding the African American community and our culture today. And you know, I was just looking at some numbers today. The fact is that jobs are up in the African American community, and the issue of schools, improving the schools. You know, our president supports school choice, and many oppose that in public education, and yet it's an opportunity for our schools to improve for everyone. And so, you know, I could give a lot of reasons why we could be encouraged as Christians, because the principles that we believe in, religious liberty, and the fact that, you know, we have a vice president standing alongside of our president who is strongly committed to Christ and has the heart and ear of our president and is praying with him. And so, yes, there are issues always with every leader, but we need to pray for our president, respect the office if you cannot even respect, you know, we used to say respect the office if you can't respect the man. But, you know, as Christians, we ought to respect those who have authority over us. And so we should pray, and we get it that some people don't appreciate President Trump, they don't like his style or whatever, but let's try to stay focused on the issues and what's important in the direction of our country and who can lead us there.
Well, Pastor Graham, would you take a couple of questions from some callers with us?
I'd be glad to.
All right. Let's go to David in Oklahoma. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes. I actually was speaking with Tony earlier in the week, and I may be repeating some of what I mentioned then, and I apologize, but you know, when somebody asks me if I'm prejudiced, I plan to tell them, yeah, you know, it's a part of my heart. It's something we have to work on. You know, I know that I have been, and I know that I'm susceptible to being that again, even with my own people. You know, it's not something that lets go easily. It hangs on, and you have to work at it. You know, in the long run, you know, I don't mean it. Sometimes I think it depends on how we feel about ourselves at the time as to whether it manifests itself in a word or a thought about somebody. That was all. But thank you very much.
All right. Pastor Graham?
Yeah, I would just respond to that by saying while all of us deal with prejudice, bias, and upbringing and all the rest, there's no place for hate in the life of a Christian. In fact, 1 John tells us that if we hate our brother, if we have hate in our hearts, if our hearts become headquarters for hate, then they're headquarters for hell. And there's no place in the life of the believer for hate towards anyone, certain people of other races. So we should make a distinction. We should all seek to overcome our prejudice and biases that are ungodly in any way. But starting with the very fact that we have received the grace of God, we have been saved by his love and power, there's no place for hate in the Christian's life, period, end of story.
Amen. Amen. Let's go to AJ in Kansas, lived there for a number of years. AJ, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much. I just really kind of had a couple of comments. Carl Minniger wrote a book on whatever became of sin, and until we address that in the hearts of people, pulling down statues and things in down south of the Confederates, that's not what's going to make the difference. You got to change people's heart, the way they think. So the man thinking in his heart. And, you know, we're back in that situation where it says we are a nation that's calling evil good and good evil. So once we realize where we are as a nation, God is calling Christians to wake it up. The people of the world are going to do what they do, but believers have to turn from their evil ways, and that's where we start at.
And that will preach. Amen, brother. I agree totally and completely. You know, politics are important as far as they go, but we know as Christians ultimately the answer is Jesus and the cross and the forgiveness of sins and the power to overcome. And we therefore condemn lawlessness and we condemn sin because God has condemned it, and sin of any kind. And the problem is a sin problem for this nation, and the problem is in the human heart. And therefore, we deal with the human heart. You know, one of the big issues that we care about as a church and our church in the Dallas area is the pro-life issue. And 25 years ago, we started a pregnancy center to overcome evil with good and to give the gospel of Jesus Christ to people facing crisis in their life. So through the years, we've saved hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of babies, and we've seen multiplied people come to faith in Jesus Christ. That's the answer to the life question, and is the gospel of Jesus Christ. And any question you mentioned, whether it is life or race or freedom, ultimately these are gospel-centered issues.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins, and we're having a very thoughtful conversation with Pastor Jack Graham, pastor of Prestonwood Baptist Church in Plano, Texas. Pastor, what would it mean for the nation to see our president to call the nation to prayer and restoration? What do you think that would mean to folks?
For those who love God and who want to pray, it would be a great call. And we've had calls to prayer by our presidents in the past. That's certainly meaningful and appropriate. National prayer in a spirit of repentance, certainly. You see it in the Bible for sure. So it would be appropriate to do that. Of course, some would, frankly, you probably know anything this president does right now, those who oppose him would oppose that. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't pray. And whether the president calls us to pray or not, we as pastors should call on one another and our churches to unite together in prayer and seeking God for revival. And not only revival, but evangelism, to share the good news of Jesus Christ. My good friend Greg Laurie, pastor and evangelist in Southern California. They're hosting for the 25th or 30th year the Harvest Crusade in Southern California at Anaheim Stadium, and there'll be over 100,000 people there to hear the gospel this weekend. And who knows that God could light a fire on the West Coast that could spread across America as lives were changed. We saw a revolution, a Jesus revolution, in the 1960s. I was a teenager then. And some of us are still in ministry today because we were called to Christ in that period of time, and it was a revival, and we're praying for it in our own time, in and I'm asking God to let me see it one more time.
We've got time for a couple of more calls. Give us a call, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Pastor Graham, you know, I grew up in Kansas City, and in the 60s, I saw this kind of racial divide in the streets of our city, and the Coast Guard was there trying to keep people from one another. It was an awful thing. It's a part of my childhood. And for folks that might be listening, how do you handle folks that may look at you poorly because of your beliefs, but in your heart, you know you're not a racist. You know you look at all people the same. I love what Dr. Alveda King says. There are no races. We're all part of one human race, and underneath that skin, we all bleed the same.
I agree with that. And as to what you say, you could say it, and we should say it. And unfortunately, many times we've been too silent about addressing this issue. I don't believe it's been any purposeful silence. It's just been neglect. It's been apathy in some ways that we have not spoken of these issues regarding races and divisions and prejudices and certainly hate. And this has been a wake-up call, I believe, to many. And we should speak up and speak out and stand with our brothers and sisters, not only as Christians, but as fellow Americans. We should stand together.
And what about?
I would also say, most people would say, but those are words. And actions, as the old cliche says, speak louder than words. So it's time to show it. And it's time to serve our communities and to bless one another, to pray together, to serve together. I know the gospel moves on relationships, and as we build relationships with one another, when we actually know one another and talk to each other and work together and share together, we have fellowship in Christ, and we're able to make a difference together.
Give us a call at 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. What about the pastors out there who are trying to navigate through these waters right now and what to preach from the pulpit and how to deal with the anger that's out there?
Well, there's plenty of biblical material, verses and scripture to speak. And, you know, I just spoke earlier of 1 John regarding hate and hating our brother, and certainly that should be preached. But what we're trying to do is call our people to action. And as we pray that we would get up from our knees with a commitment to share the gospel with our community, and that we would have conversations with people, and the conversations would include Jesus. I was just reading that the average person has 27 conversations per day. And the question was raised, how many of those conversations are about?
There you go.
Are they in gospel conversations? So,
we've got to wrap it up, Pastor. We're on a hard break, but Pastor Jack Graham of Prestonwood Baptist Church, thank you so very much for being with us and sharing your thoughts. God is our refuge and strength and ever-present help in time of trouble. Therefore, we will not fear. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Have a blessed weekend.
This is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.